Roto, what's happening?
Not much, Jason. How are you?
Nice. I'm great. It's Friday, man. Friday before the long weekend. How can you not be in a good mood? The weather's awesome where we
It's
are
good.
at. How's the
Yeah,
weather out east?
it's good. It hasn't been the hottest summer in Toronto, so it's one of the hotter days, humidity-wise, and I'm a little hungover. I was at the Jack White show
Oh.
at the Air Canada Centre last night, and it was unbelievable.
Did
So.
Jack White? I was noticing a lot of people. I'll be honest, I'm not like a diehard follower of Jack White. I've heard his stuff. He's obviously ultra talented. Does he actually never smile, or is that like a running gag, or is he that serious and downtrodden?
You know what? I think it's part of his public persona to a degree. I think he's genuinely like maybe a lot of, really smart people, maybe an introvert in some regards, which makes it tough. But man, he was a showman on stage. It wasn't
Yeah.
like he looked like he was miserable and wasn't enjoying himself because he played, the first set was an hour and 15 minutes of nonstop, and he kind of played himself out with this unbelievable instrumental that was like Hendrix-esque, and played for an hour and 15 minutes, then came out for the encore and played for another hour and a bit.
Wow.
So he and went over the, how these buildings have the curfews, right? So it's usually 11 p.m. at the Air Canada Centre, and he went long past that. And I think, as Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace said to me on Twitter, the band, clearly is enjoying itself because it has to pay some type of overage fine at that stage for playing beyond their permit. So he was clearly enjoying himself, and the crowd was into it. And as I said to people, he just reminds me so much of Robert Plant with that voice. I don't know if that comparison works for everybody, but for me, that's what I hear when I hear him. And that combined with the guitarist's wizardry, I think he's a genius, to be honest.
It's interesting you say that because Robert Plant's obviously outstanding, and those big name guys. I got to see Led Zeppelin once in a small venue, which was
Oh
ridiculous.
man. Oh
You
man.
look at Jack's a guy that could, if you took him in like one of those 800 seat venues, it would be
Right.
mind blowing.
Oh man, he could play a club, he could play wherever you like. And I think, it was my first time seeing him, period, live, and to see it at a big arena, without the big screens, Jason. Like, that was another little interesting element for me, is that, nobody had any visual aid. And one of his band members comes out at the start of the show and says, if you guys don't mind, just put away your cameras. We're gonna have a photographer up here that'll take pictures of Jack all night, and you can upload them the next day, so you don't have to have everybody be distracted by seeing you hold up your damn phone during a show. And it worked for the most part.
Awesome.
People really, I think I saw maybe five or six cameras in the crowd that turned on, because you can't stop everybody. But for the most part, people let it go, and it was just this kind of room bathed in a blue light that made him look even more like Edward Scissorhands, and with that scowl and hair, and he just blew the doors off from there. He was completely in command from the moment he went on the stage, and really had the crowd in the palm of his hand.
I love that idea because, I've seen, like, Bruno Mars to me is one of the best musicians I've seen. Like, that guy can do anything and play so many. And at his concert where we were sitting, there was 10 people around me who watched the concert basically videoing it. And I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. You
It's
can't
embarrassing.
actually enjoy it at all. And I love the fact that he basically had to tell people, don't be dumb. Actually be here, get in the moment and enjoy it. Because like the worst is the guy from the second deck taking his camera phone picture. I'm like, yeah, who are you gonna show that to? Like it's the worst picture quality ever.
Nobody at your funeral will be demanding that videotape of your concert time. It's very very selfish in a way, and you understand to some degree why people want to document things. They're having a good time, they want to capture the moment. But you're right, I think when you really immerse yourself in it, the way people used to do before technology gave them the option, I think you're more wrapped up in the moment. You're ultimately going to remember it more than staring at it through a television when it's right in front of you.
Adam Proto joins us. I want to talk the PK Subban situation because I really liked Montreal's decision a few years ago to go into the bridge contract. I have no problem with guys having to earn their salaries, and you know what? Then you're going to pay them because they're then proven legit guys. And PK Subban, I don't think there's any argument. He's a top 15 defenseman, probably a top 10 defenseman in the NHL. Why are the Montreal Canadiens, like, is there some internal thing? Why are they so loath to want to pay him like that?
Yeah, it beats me, Jason. I think, I agree with everything you said. I think, it was a smart gamble, and people said it at the time that Marc Bergevin had every right to exercise the leverage that that he'd been given with the collective bargaining agreement to kind of force PK into this situation, and could have signed him for a lot longer at a lot less price, probably a deal like Jake Gardner got, to be honest, here in Toronto. Might have been PK Subban's. We wouldn't be having this conversation at all, but, you know, what happens is they gamble and you say he proves you right. And at that stage, you know, I think, as you say, you have to reward the guy. You have to recognize where the marketplace is for defensemen. And, I mean, if Andrew McDonald is worth, what, $5 million for the Philadelphia Flyers, I know you're supposed to always go low in arbitration, but you're going to start with $5.25. I mean, come on, it's a little ridiculous when everybody knows what all PK really has to do is just wait out the term, you know, take a one-year deal here and there to get him to unrestricted free agency, and then he can sit back and watch other teams happily pay $8 million at least, if not more, you know, to have him on their team. So, you know, I agree with what I saw from Bob McKenzie this afternoon, saying, you know, their actions would suggest that they're not as enamored with PK as maybe some of us are, but, you know, in a league that really prioritizes the type of player he can be, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't commit to it, because, you know, even though there is a sticker shock associated with the number 8 and up, I think, Jason, as the cap goes up and as the revenues of the league go up, you know, this is going to be forgotten. And the only thing that people will remember in this case is that Mark Bergevin and the Habs may have burned a bridge that they're going to regret very soon.
Yeah, and here's the thing about the burning of the bridge. Like, if they're just being stubborn, I get it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can understand their stance. And if the arbitrator awards them, let's say, 6 to 6.5, or maybe 7, who knows what it is, on a 1-year deal, that next summer, if Montreal goes to PK Subban and says, here you go, here's an 8-year deal worth $68 to $72 million, I still don't see how he could walk away from that, because it's guaranteed money.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, that's the only thing I can think would factor into it is a desire to, you know, to get out of that fishbowl market or to play at home, or, you know, who knows what a player thinks or goes through their mind. So for me, it would have to be a personal decision at that stage to leave what is still a pretty good team and an up-and-coming team, and a team that will have a chance to win and a team that will clearly spend. So, yeah, it's what makes this decision baffling is that, you know, what could you imagine that would go wrong if you're Mark Bergevin this year that would cause you to, you know, to not want to commit to him long-term next time or to try and shortchange him again? It's like the end result and the end game here is still going to be in that $8 million range. And, you know, that's just a fact. And I don't care if Drew Doughty signed for $7 million. That was the market back then. The market changes, and I think there's this kind of growing movement too, you know, not just within, I think, the PK camp, but I think with around the league with agents, Jason, where, you know, they're sick of this argument about hometown discounts and, you know, taking it for the team, essentially. I think at some point they're looking at the business going, okay, well, we gave you 50% in the last lockout. Now you still want to shortchange us, and you still want to point to examples like, you know, Daniel Alfredson and Eugene Melnyk in Ottawa, where the player thought clearly he was going to be repaid on the back end and was not. You know, so I think there's a little bit of an erosion of trust going on that, you know, that may or may not be a huge part of the PK situation. But at the same time, I think you can't discount the fact that guys understand more than ever that the owners in the last lockout made it about the business. And if that's the way they want to be, then that's cool. But the players are going to, you know, start using the leverage that they have.
Yeah, it's true. And I understand if the players do that. And so maybe the teams are realizing the only times we have leverage is when they don't have, you know, there is obviously here's an arbitrator, but in, you know, in the previous bridge contract, like, it's still like the league is still so much in favor of the players because the owners can't control themselves, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the end result till the end of time, right? That's why agents still think we're going to have another lockout, even though it's sacrilege to even consider it at this stage. But, you know, they really believe that because the owners will hold up, you know, we'll stop getting these great press releases 1 or 2 years before the current CBA ends. And then next thing you know, it'll be, you know, it's just such a hard business to run and blah, 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 blah. And it'll be the same thing. So I think this, you know, people don't want to talk about the lockout and, you know, you want to talk about hockey, it's true. But yeah, this is an undeniable fact, Jason, for me, when I talk to people behind the scenes, that they, there's still a fundamental weariness, if not outright distrust of the numbers that are going on and the games that the teams are playing with players. And again, agents are sharks, right? I mean, it's a brutal business. And if you don't think you're trying to maximize your client's value in any way possible, you're really not doing your job for them.
Adam Proto, join us. Adam, I noticed you got an article coming, and I prefaced that by texting or asking some of our female audience to text in things that they thought would help them market. A few of them said nothing. They feel that you know, they're same as hockey fans, but I did get a lot still saying they complained about the jerseys, right? The jerseys don't fit women properly. No, what responses did you get?
Yeah, well, I can't give them all away, but I think, those were certainly two of them. I think that was the prevailing one was absolutely don't treat us any differently. And, you know, the more you talk to women about it, I think the more it becomes clear that that is the main message, right? I mean, as I said on Twitter, sports is about tribalism, right? And if you're a member of the tribe, you just want to feel part of the tribe. You don't want to be singled out. You don't want to be made to feel as if you're somehow different from the rest of the tribe. So, you know, I think it's incumbent on the league to kind of address that when they're looking at things like ladies' nights or you know, ice girls. I think that was another, you know, pretty common complaint. There were some that said, okay, I don't have a problem with that. I don't care. But certainly a lot of women felt as if, you know, they were being, or their gender is being objectified by the presence of ice girls and cheerleaders. And yeah, to your point about jerseys, the pink thing was an issue for a wide variety of people. You know, a news anchor responded to me. You know, all kinds of people really didn't like the option or the feeling that there was this kind of gender associated color that they had to kind of be marked by. And so little things like that. And again, it all plays back to that first rule, which is don't make them feel different. You know what I mean? But they just want to enjoy the game. They appreciate the game, you know, as much as we do. They're as smart in many cases as any of the smartest guys are. And there are some not so smart ones, but you can certainly say the same for the men out there too. So, so that was the big takeaway for me, and it'll be on our website tomorrow, but with the full results, and you'll see some of the range of response I got, which was really impressive. I mean, the clearly there's a need for more discussion on this, and as I said, you know, to some people, I think we have to have it because if you're going to grow the game, you want to grow it in every means possible. You don't want to restrict yourself to, you know, just be saying this is a man sport, as we like to say so often. You know, you have to be cognizant of who wants to love your game and then love them back. And I think you do that by, you know, by asking them what they're interested in and responding. And so that was, you know, one of the things behind my reason to kind of ask the question.
It's not directly related to hockey, but I think indirectly it is for sure. The PGA, yesterday Dustin Johnson said he was taking a leave of absence. Well, it turns out because he was suspended by the PGA Tour for failing a drug test, cocaine. Second time he'd had cocaine, he'd had weed before. I look at that. To me, is this just another sign of how bad or lax the NHL drug testing is? Because I'm telling you, I know for a fact that cocaine is rather prevalent for a certain amount of young guys in the NHL at different points in their career.
Sure. I mean, you hear those stories all the time, right? It's nothing that you can prove, otherwise you'd be writing it. But certainly there's a lot of chatter about, you know, issues, not just with cocaine, but prescription medication, that, you know, I think is still an issue in the NHL. I think the fact that, you know, that we have team doctors who are team employees still doesn't really sit well with me, Jason. I don't know how you feel about that issue in particular, but, you know, when you're doing things like clearing guys for concussions or, you know, helping them with pain medications, if you've got somebody working for the team, that just wouldn't fly. Like, boxing wouldn't allow a promoter to hire his own doctor for a boxer. You have to be verified by a state-sanctioned physician, and I think that's the next place I'd like to see the NHL expand beyond just, you know, harsher testing and more regular testing, which I think we'd all agree that, you know, that's the way to go for these guys. But, you know, certainly the prescription pills to me are just as big an issue. And I just rewatched the documentary on the late Derek Bogard. The New York Times did a fantastic documentary. If you want to find it online, it's about a half an hour long. And I think the prescription pill issue clearly was, you know, one of the major issues of his life. And I think something that, again, that I've heard from other sources and haven't been able to verify, but that this is a fact that these guys are leaning on these pills because they know there's not going to be testing for them, but B, because more importantly, their body's being punished and crushed in this kind of compressed schedule and no real off season. And then, you know, we wonder why they, you know, they veer off into things like coke or weed or what have you. You know, it doesn't really surprise me at all. It's a high pressure profession where, you know, beyond the guaranteed contracts, there are usually bunches of guys at the bottom end of the roster that are nervous about keeping their jobs. And again, and anybody in any high end walk of life, you know, you're going to have a section of people that go that route. So, I think it's important that the league, you know, be more honest about it. You know, what it has to know is an issue, and be more transparent about how they're going to address it.
Adam, always good to catch up with you. Have a good long weekend.
Thanks. Enjoy the long weekend too. Thanks.
And make sure you go online and download your pictures from last night.
I am going right to bed very soon. It was a very long night.
Nice. All right.
Have a good night.
Appreciate your time, Adam Proto. Whoa.